All right, it has been far too long since we had a three-man pod with the other two biggest cap dorks that I know, Dan Feldman and Danny LaRue. What's up, gentlemen?
How's it going?
I'm honored to be in that group because there's some strong competition.
Yeah, I guess maybe the two biggest cap dorks I know that are willing to record a podcast with me at 10 p.m. Pacific on a Saturday, on a Sunday night.
There we go.
At one Eastern, Dan doing yeoman's work here. So the point of our gathering today, we decided to add Dan at the last minute to our Sunday pod, is to talk about some of the impending free agents. We've got almost half the season under our belts now, and we want to take a look at who among those free agents has really helped themselves and who has hurt their value. I mean, I think one of the biggest things as I was going through it, I had a much easier time coming up with guys who hurt themselves, or I'm sorry, guys who helped themselves than who hurt themselves.
Yeah, I thought I would have the same. Guys that just came to mind, but I actually pulled up a list of players, and I just put them in two columns, guys who've helped themselves a lot, guys who've hurt themselves a lot. I hurt themselves a lot. Hurt themselves list was much longer to start.
Oh, really?
All right, mine was a lot more like Nate's than Dan's, but we'll see how that goes.
All right, so what we're going to do here, we'll each just pick three guys who really helped themselves, three who hurt themselves, and talk about why we think that that's the case and what we think these guys might be getting on the open market. And then if we got some time, maybe we can talk about some of the other interesting ones if we don't actually get there. So, Dan, since you are the guestiest of the two guests, why don't you get first pick here?
All right. So I'll start off with somebody who I think has helped themselves the most, Rajon Rondo. And I think going into last summer, there were some very smart people, some of whom might be speaking on this show right now, who thought, Rondo, maybe he doesn't even belong in the league. Like, do you want him for a minimum contract? Is he worth the headaches? Is he worth the hassle? And yes, he's showing there's still a hassle with him. There's still some headaches. But he's also playing like it's worth it, to the point people are talking about a max contract for him.
Who are those people?
Oh, you can find some anonymous GMs who will throw out there that, you know, maybe he could get a max contract. I'm forgetting offhand who wrote about it. But yeah, there was definitely chatter.
Wow, that's pretty remarkable. I don't see it that way, but I do agree with you that he certainly helped himself, because he was sort of at the point where you wondered whether he could really help a team, and he's rehabilitated his value. I think probably one of the biggest things that has helped him has been some of DeMarcus Cousins' comments about, oh yeah, we got to have this guy back, like I'm going to be upset if we don't have him back.
And I think the other amazing thing about it, when you think about it in context, is that when he signed that contract, I think all of us thought that the Kings, well, both for the years and the dollar reasons, that it was a contract that was a little bit outsized for what his market was at the time he signed it. And right now, I think that, you know, if you were theoretically, if we fast forwarded to July 15th, 2016, and he signed a one-year $9 million contract, I think we'd all be surprised.
Well, and Rondo, I mean, he's having really his best year since before the ACL tear, 16.9 PR, true shooting percentage of 492, which is actually like perilously close to the league average, is about 53%, but for guards, it's lower. Big men obviously usually shoot a better percentage. His free throw rate has rebounded to actually being normal instead of 9%, which it was when he was with Dallas last year. Defensive rebounding has been better. You know, obviously, I think he's leading the league in assists, right?
Yeah.
Assists per game. Yeah. So you really can't complain about what the Kings have gotten. I mean, I'd say that his contract on $9.5 million a year is actually like pretty good value, at least for this year.
Right. That, I mean, that's the big issue with him, is where his value was last year. They gave him this one-year contract, which is great for Rondo. He's going to go back on the market at a perfect time, and he's going to make a lot more money. But the Kings really have little advantage in re-signing him other than any loyalty he has to them, or more likely to Marcus Cousins.
Yeah, it's because they really, I mean, they'll have cap room, but they'll only, if they were going to operate over the cap, they could only offer him 120% of that $9.5 million to start, which might be enough maybe if they give him a lot of years, but I would imagine probably not. So two questions. What kind of contract do you think he is worth, and what kind of contract do you think he will get?
Well, that's tough. I think he's going to get more than he's worth. I mean, he's nearing 30.
I mean, everybody is, right? Like, in this environment.
Except Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to get near max, like maybe just a tick below.
Yeah, he'll have turned 30 by the time free agency hits.
I mean, it's mostly because I just don't trust the Kings to know what they're doing and to really use whatever leverage they have. Because Rondo's biggest problem in free agency is there are so many good point guards in the league. Few teams need him.
Yeah, but there are no good point guards who are in free agency.
That's a good point.
I think that's part of it, too.
Well, Mike Conley.
I mean, he's... Yeah. Well, but you know, I think most people are assuming that he's going to go back to Memphis. So I don't know. I mean, I think if they gave him, like, 2 years, you know, $15 million, I wouldn't, you know, throw up in my mouth.
15 per?
Per.
Yeah. Two years, $15 million a year, yeah. I think that could be okay. I think it's the years that could really end up being the problem with him. What about you, Danny? What do you think he gets?
I think he gets 3 or 4 years at about starting at about 15. And I'm not saying he's going to deserve that. I wouldn't give him that. But he's one of those guys who I think he's going to get overpaid by the Kings. But somebody's going to do that, because what we've learned this year is that while there are a lot of good point guards, not having one is devastating. Just look at the Brooklyn Nets right now. And so I think somebody is going to look out there and realize that they don't have somebody, and they're going to be terrified, especially when the point guard class in this draft, from what I've heard, isn't really that strong where you could convince yourself that a young guy can do it.
All right, let's take a quick break here to tell you about Audible.com. I have been an Audible subscriber for over 10 years now. So the internet's leading source of spoken word entertainment, including books on tape. I shouldn't say books on tape because, you know, that was like technology 15 years ago. Audible actually enables you to avoid books on tape. And the way they do that is by you subscribing, and you can listen to a book a month. You can get your first month free by using the URL audibletrial.com/capspace. Capspace is very easy to remember because we talk about that all the time on the show. And the other thing that's really making Audible so good right now is if you buy books for your Amazon Kindle, they are affiliated with Amazon, and they have this technology called Whisper Sync technology that lets you basically pick up listening where you left off reading your book. So you can get in the car, listen to your book, and then come back, pick up right off again on your Kindle before you go to bed. It's great. I've been listening to the Wheel of Time series, reading it, and it's 14 books long, so pretty awesome. And being able to read and listen in the car has been really helpful in getting through that, especially those times when I get home and I just have to know what's going to happen next. So it's audibletrial.com/capspace, and it's a great way to support the program and make yourself a better person by reading. All right, Danny, who's first on your list here?
Okay, so I'm gonna go a little bit different, and Tyler Johnson. And the reason for that is Tyler Johnson was flying under the radar. He's having a really good year, and he is in this class with somebody else I think Nate's already written about and will probably come up in our thing with Jordan Clarkson. Is he's a guy that a team can give a lot of money to eventually, but they don't really have to pay him as much right now. So you could kind of get into a circumstance because of the Gilbert Arenas rule where a team just kind of feels like, oh, we can throw money at him, that'll be okay.
If he were unrestricted, and let's talk about him because, as you mentioned, he's under the radar. He basically, I think we're at the point where we can assume he's pretty close to a 40% three-point shooter. Not really a pure point guard, but at age 20, this is his age 23 season, has the athleticism to definitely play two off the bench, push the ball in transition, and a pretty good defensive player. He's actually 18th in RPM right now among shooting guards. So I think he contributes to that nice Heat bench unit, but... And he's making essentially the minimum. So that's why I think he's such a good choice, Danny, because I think guys who go from just kind of minimum fringy guys, I mean, he got signed out of their D-League team last year, you know, to 10-day contracts. You know, this isn't a guy who was seen as, you know, a guy who was an established NBA player at all. And there's talk even he could get cut before the season started. I think that he – so you mentioned the Arenas rule. The way that works is – he's because he has 2 years of experience, the most you can give him is the MLE and then the MLE with a 4.5% raise for the second year. Then if you want to go more in the third year, you can max him out. And that seems like a little bit beyond, you know, what he really is. So, I think probably what will end up happening is that he gets an offer sheet for the MLE. I think he would be well worth that.
Yeah, I could see him getting something more in the, like, 324 range. That's kind of what was in my head. And the way that it would structure in that is it would be more in the last year. And he's also one of those guys who we'll talk about this probably with the series of people. Miami's situation is so interesting is that he can do it as a leverage play if he wants because his cap hold is really low. So if he wants to stay in Miami, he can just kind of wait it out a little bit, and they'll probably reward him. But if he goes early, he can really push the envelope and maybe make them consider letting him go.
So that third season, it can go any number up to what his max would have been if it weren't for the arena's provision. There's still the trick, though, of teams have to fit in whatever they offer him, over whether it's over 3 or 4 years. If you're going up like that, you have to fit in his average salary under the cap. Shouldn't be too big of a problem this year because there are a lot of teams that are going to have plenty of cap room. But that was one of the reasons he didn't quite make my list. You know, just there's those restrictions about him. It's a little harder to pay him more. I think he's played well. But I'm not sure exactly how much that's going to reward him this summer relative to the guys who have improved their stock the very, very most. The other thing.
Well, I will say this though: if I'm another team, he's a guy that I think you realistically could poach in restricted free agency.
Definitely,
because he, you know, Miami's going to be trying to use cap room. His cap hold is going to be tiny, obviously, and maybe what they'll do is just agree to a new contract with him. And they might even be inspired to overpay a little bit, but they'll still be limited. They'll only have early bird rights on him, too. But they might be able to offer him enough with those to just hold on to his cap hold, spend up to the cap, and then offer him as much as they can under the early bird rights, which would be basically the average player salary starting at about $6 million or so.
And they definitely like him, which is the other reason he didn't quite make my list. Like, I thought he flew under the radar a bit last year and was pretty good. You watch him play, and he has a nose for the ball. He makes the right plays. He gets the right spot. He's very active. He's athletic. Like, he has the energy to do it. So that's part of the reason I didn't think he raised his stock quite as much, because I thought, especially to the Heat, it was already decently high coming into the year.
Okay, yeah, maybe. I thought of him as just, you know, not an established rotation guy even, and to say that we're talking about him, I mean, if he plays like this all year, it'd be difficult for me to imagine him getting less than the MLE to start. All right, so I have to pick someone here now that Danny took mine, and I'm frazzled. I'll go with Nick Batum, who, you know, I mean, I kind of assumed that he would be an average starter, and we've talked many times on past programs about how that type of player is going to get about $15 million a year in this market. But remember, he also had the worst year of his career, basically, since when he was a rookie the year before last, you know, shooting in the low 30s on threes. I think his PER was like under 10. And I think you wondered whether that something was going wrong. He was age 26, 27. Or whether it was just that wrist problem, and he's now had the best season of his career in Charlotte, taking on a larger offensive role than he was able to in Portland, and basically I think any team in the league can use him. I would be very surprised, unless either he gets hurt or really drops off, if he doesn't get $20 million a year for 4 years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's excellent. He was number four on my list. Yeah, I can't believe he's improved his efficiency to this degree while playing such a bigger role. You know, I thought that Charlotte was asking for trouble, asking him to be a go-to player. Really, he's been a great glue guy at his best, filling in the gaps.
And they've completely fallen apart while he's been out. They've lost like six in a row while he's been out, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a key part of this team in a way I didn't think he would be.
And the other thing I think that's really remarkable about him, and you talk about the money, is that also I think he's changed his own options, because he was a guy who I think would have been more of a, you know, like a consolation prize for somebody. I think now, you know, if he wants to go the Damari Carroll route and go pick somebody early, he can do that. But he's going to be he's going to have a lot of really nice choices for himself. And I don't know exactly what he's going to want. This is going to be a big opportunity for him. But I think that's the other way that he's really changed. You know, if he wants to go back to Portland, if he wants to do kind of whatever he wants to do, those options are going to be available to him.
All right, Dan, who you got?
Do you want another stock up, or are we going to switch back?
Yeah, let's go stock up.
All right. Number two on my list. You guys haven't stolen anybody from me yet. Boban Marjanovic.
He was going to be my next guy.
I think he's shown flashes of being great, and if you're a team that strikes out on the provenly good players, maybe you make him a big offer and hope that, you know, what he's done over a small sample is sustainable. Like, you know, it might be, it might not, but what are your better options? If there's a team looking to shoot for the moon, you know, he's the guy.
You know, I think he, we've seen guys like him kind of bench guys. Granted, you know, he has like just this awesome PR. He's been really good, you know, but he's also kind of in the Spurs system. He is limited as, and I think as a guy in bigger minutes could be attacked just due to his lack of quickness. Although, you know, he could make up for that with his gargantuan size. As a first year guy, he's another one of these guys who will be an arenas guy. The Spurs very likely going to be off, operating over the cap. So you'd have to imagine, unless you really overpay, they will probably match.
Yeah, I think that that is the big limitation here, is that the Spurs won't have that many ways to even to improve or maintain based on what we expect their cap picture to be. So the way that you would pry him away would be through a crazy like third year, or I don't, maybe even a fourth year, which would be crazy for a guy who's will have completed one NBA season. But in terms of just making the MLE or beyond that a possibility, that's why I thought he needed to be on this list.
Well, yeah, as a guy who is just out of the NBA, I mean, that we're even talking about him. And I kind of give more credence to those guys who just, you know, have established clearly that they are NBA players and deserve a decent contract.
I'm not quite so sure the Spurs would match a big offer if, you know, has one of those weighted third and or fourth years attached. And maybe they just sold Danny Green a bill of goods. But I looked at the fact that they somehow got him to take only $10 million last year when he didn't need to. Like, they could have made the cap work. It would have cost them more. But they still could have gotten Aldridge. They could have still had, you know, Duncan and Ginobili back. They could have had the exact same team on the floor and paid them more. I wonder if there are real concerns about how high that payroll gets. And they already have a lot of money committed. I could see if a team makes a huge offer to Boban that maybe they would just say, you know, it's not quite worth taking a chance on him at that price. We can find another serviceable big.
When I said overpay, I meant like MLE or more. You know, I mean, I think if I were another team, I don't know that I would be comfortable offering him, you know, a 3-year deal with a third year really, you know, getting into like eight figures or something after those first two MLE years that are limited under the arenas. I mean, I think, you know, 3 years, $15 million is probably the most I'd feel comfortable with him, unless he shows a lot more over the course of the year. But I'll have to watch a little bit more film on him too, maybe, because those numbers are just like video game numbers. And to just see how he's compiling them and whether he can actually really defend a pick and roll against, you know, NBA offense, you know, good players will be something to watch, I think.
I agree with you about feeling comfortable, but there are going to be plenty of teams that strike out on good players. And so what would you rather do, just stand pat or maybe do something that's uncomfortable that has a high upside? I mean, he's shown flashes. You know he's capable of doing this in limited minutes. So there's at least something you can see there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible that he could be very effective, but I think there's a big, big variance with a guy like him. I think he's also either 26 or 27 already as well. All right, Danny, who's your next guy?
Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon has played in every single game for the New Orleans Pelicans this year, and I think that was the biggest concern that people had about him. Yeah, I mean, he's not maybe at the highs of his best years, but the durability concern was so prevalent with him, and to be able to do that and be pretty consistently good for them, despite everything else that's been going on with New Orleans, I think he's really done a lot. Not as much necessarily for the dollars, because I think those were always going to be there just with how thin the two-guard market is, but a team maybe being more comfortable throwing 3 or 4 years at him.
Well, I just went through the first page of ESPN's Real Plus Minus, and he was not listed there under shooting guards. Just went through the second page, did a Control F. He's not listed there. Let's see if he's on the third page. Now, wait a minute. Where is he? Why is he not on there? All right, maybe he was on the first page, and I missed it. Then we'll be cutting this if that's true. Oh, yeah. No, negative 37th in Real Plus Minus among shooting guards.
There we go. There we go.
Just,
my boy,
just below
on the
Danny
first page.
Green. Just below Danny Green, shockingly enough, who was an RPM All-Star.
Rough year for Danny
year.
Green.
But nonetheless, what does Eric Gordon do besides shoot three-pointers?
What does he need to do to get a lot of money beyond shoot three-pointers?
Like, he is horrible defensively. you know, the whole team is horrible defensively. It's really, and he's not really good enough at like running a pick and roll or secondary playmaking. So if you're going to have him on the team, you really got to have two guys who can attack off the dribble, one at the three and one at the one. I mean, I think, you know, maybe he does get paid just because of what he shoots on threes, but I did not have him on my list at all personally.
Yeah, he didn't make.
What do you think?
He
Dan?
Didn't make my list either, and I just don't think half a season of being healthy is enough to convince teams that he's behind these injury problems, that he's not fragile, that he's not at a higher injury risk. I agree. I think he's helped his stock by playing and playing okay, but I wouldn't put him near the guys who've helped themselves the most personally.
Well, I do think that he at least, I mean, the injury he had last year was a shoulder, so he hasn't really had any lower body issues now in a year and a half. So I do think, I agree with Danny's point on that one. I just don't think he's that good, really, and I don't think he's played that well. And just also, another thing that we've seen as well is that role players on bad teams tend to get much worse contracts than role players on good teams, and I think with just how much of a tire fire New Orleans has been this year, that's going to infect him as well. All right, is it my turn?
Sure.
Danny, I can't believe you didn't go Kent Bazemore.
Kent Bazemore was on my list. I wanted to go in a different route on my second one because that's too close to Tyler Johnson.
Basically 7 months ago, we were talking about how the Hawks were in big trouble because Kyle Korver was out and they had to play Kent Bazemore, and he just, you know, was, by pretty much every metric last year, barely an NBA rotation guy, probably not even that. You know, I mean, he was out of the rotation until Cephalosha got hurt. Now he's been starting all year for a good team, shooting a really nice percentage on three-pointers. He's a quality defender. He's not really of threes because he doesn't weigh enough, but he can guard ones and twos, so he would be a nice addition for, like, you know, a team like Portland or something. I think he would be excellent on them because he could play, you know, play the three a little bit when the other team didn't have a great three, but he could also then play the two alongside CJ and Damian Lillard and then guard the one when the one was the better player. I think he's someone who, if he keeps playing the way that he did, and you wonder whether his shooting is sustainable, but he also is from that Hawks development program that instantly makes everybody who comes there able to shoot. You know, I mean, I could see him getting like $10 million a year.
Oh, yeah, I could definitely see that. I think he's boosted his stock a lot, and he's hitting free agency at the right time. He's 26 years old. I think some teams are going to line up to pay a player like him through his prime.
Yeah, and a lot of these, you know, you were assuming that they keep playing like this. You know, for certain guys, Bazemore among them, has never shown this level of proficiency from three, both with the percentage he's shooting, the difficulty of the shots that he's taking, you know, less shots with his feet set that are wide open the way it has been in the past. You know, he's kind of tightened up his delivery. It's not quite as long and awkward as it used to be. So you hope that he can continue that, but he also hasn't done this in his career, so maybe he will regress. But I think another guy who I think a lot of people thought even the Hawks overpaid for him at 2 years, $4 million on his last contract, and I think he could get pretty darn close to eight figures on this next one for him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he wants, because if he wants like a starting spot or something like that, that it could be different, even though I think his best role is being like the best perimeter player off the bench, but just kind of bouncing around to the different spots. But he's unrestricted, so he'll have some really fun choices out there.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what the Hawks want to do, because since he's made $2 million, his cap hold is not going to be very much. It's only going to be 130% of that as an early bird free agent. So what they could do if they want to retain him, and they certainly have been willing to let guys go before, Damari Carroll being the most salient example of that, but if they wanted to, they could spend up to the cap. They should have about $15 million in space, even with Horford's cap hold, and then they could just re-sign Horford and re-sign Bazemore, though that could then start getting them closer to the tax as well, and they may be unwilling to do that, but that's something to watch.
That doesn't sound like the Hawks. I think you're right. I think that would be a good thing to do, but I just don't see them doing it, not just out of history.
This isn't fair at all, and it could be totally injury-related, but the fact that Damari Carroll hasn't thrived in Toronto I think is going to turn some people off to Bazemore a little bit, especially if Carroll doesn't pick it up once he gets back healthy.
Yeah, I think that is totally injury related. I thought he actually looked great in the preseason, pretty good for those first few games before he got hurt. So it wouldn't turn me off. I'll say that. All right, who's your next guy, Dan?
So what on number three for guy bumped his stock, I've got Lance Thomas with the Knicks. A hustle player who I really couldn't understand why GMs kept signing him. He looked like more like a D-League player to me, but he adds a three-point shot to his game. And, you know, he's a real nice reserve now, and I think he'll get plenty of nice offers.
You know, I that's a great point. I didn't even consider him. And I think because I was looking at this list that I compiled kind of at the start of the season, and I probably didn't even put him on my free agent list. That's why I don't have him. But, you know, he's shooting the crap out of the ball. 5.88. True shooting percentage, taking 30% of his shots from downtown. He's hitting 41% on three-pointers. And he's a decent defender, not an amazing one, but he does have some appeal, I think, as a second-unit guy who could sort of be like a very poor man's Harrison Barnes. You know, he played as a big in college. If he can shoot the three, he's not going to create his own offense off the dribble very much. But he could play three, play four, switch on second units. So he does have some versatility, and if he can keep shooting the way he does, I do think he could be a valuable player. That's a good one.
Yeah, Lance Thomas is a guy that I thought of as well. And what I'm just wondering with him is just where is the market going to be for him? I think there are going to be a lot of teams that like him, but are they going to be like falling all over themselves to make offers? He might even just stay with the Knicks because I think they value him, and they're not going to have, depending on what they do with their flexibility. But at the same time, I think he's a great pick for this list because he's elevated his stock a lot.
Yeah, and he's another guy that if the Knicks are going to use cap space, his cap hold is going to be exceedingly small. They will have the early bird rights on him, and that then they could give him a nice raise afterwards. So that's something that they might consider doing. All right, Danny, you're next.
So it's interesting. I have two guys left that were actually two and three on my list. I assumed that you guys were going to say them, so I was letting you guys have them. But I'll say one of them, and we'll talk about the other one afterwards. And my number two guy is Festus Ezeli. I think that Ezeli had a lot of question marks. This is a guy who missed an entire season due to a knee injury and missed a lot of last season due to ankle issues. And he has missed time this year, for sure. But what he's shown is that he's a very talented player when he's on the court, and what he does at the center position is something that teams will value. And so I think teams will be comfortable throwing a lot of money at him, whatever he chooses to do with it.
He didn't quite crack my list just because I thought, I think he's improved. I agree he's helped his stock, but he was pretty solid last year when he was on the court. I'm not sure he's had a huge breakthrough.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I figured that unless he just had a total disaster of a season, which I didn't think he would, he was going to, you know, be a $10 million a year guy. You know, when we did the extension podcast, that's what we were talking about for him. So I think he'll probably get 15 now, you know, but going from 10 to 15 to me is not as large of a leap, even though I think he has played, you know, just in terms of maybe not his value, but just how good you thought he could possibly be. I think he's at the absolute ceiling of that. Like, I agree with you on that, Danny, that just in terms of expectations of how a guy was going to play versus how he has actually played, I think you're right, but maybe not in terms of the financial ramifications, because I thought he was already going to get paid like pretty close to a starting center, even if he just kind of repeated what he did last year.
I'm going to say right now that while I agree with you in terms of the valuation, I think he's going to get more than that, and I think it might be significantly more than that.
Ooh.
Wow, yeah. It'll be interesting, right? Like, is he going to start for Golden State in the playoffs? I mean, he's better than Bogut now. I think they're starting Bogut just because I think he fits better with the starters, and if you have to get something out of him, and you're not getting anything out of him off the bench, and you can get something out of Ezeli, but I do think he should play more than Bogut when they really get into the playoffs. All right, so my last guy, Jan Mahimi with the Pacers. We knew he was going to start this year. But, you know, I don't think anybody thought of him as being as good as Roy Hibbert. He has proved that he's better than Roy Hibbert. He's got, you know, he's managed to avoid killing the offense, improve his hands, one of the best defensive RPMs among centers. He's making like $4 million this year. I mean, I think he's a guy who could absolutely get like, you know, definitely into eight figures, maybe not for an incredible amount of time, but maybe even as much as 15. I mean, I think he's like, you know, a quality starting center.
Who would you pay more, Jan Mahimi or Festus Ezeli?
Oh, that's a good question. How old is Mahimi?
He's 29. That's why I would definitely pay Azili more than him.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah. So that's why I didn't realize he's quite that old. I think he's more like, 27, 28. But yeah, I mean, I think for a couple of years, you could get a quality starting center in Mahimi. I just wouldn't, he's a guy who, if I were a team that was trying to compete a little bit, I might try to go for a shorter term deal and, maybe overpay over those couple of years and then just hope that he expires rather than going, sort of the Omer Asik route. But I mean, if Omer Asik can get $10 million a year for 4 years, fifth year non-guaranteed, Jan Mahimi is, and there, Asik was 29 too. Jan Mahimi can do significantly better than that.
Well, I think part of the reason Asik did so well is because the Pelicans couldn't spend that money elsewhere. And so I don't think, that's necessarily.
The Pacers could be in that boat some way too.
True.
Are we done now? Or?
My biggest knock on Mahimi before we get off of him is just, the way the league is changing. Yeah, he's shown himself to be a fine starting center, but I think the value of that overall is less than it was even last year.
Well, here's part of why I like him too, is that when you have a center who is good enough on defense and rebounding and is okay running the pick and roll, and has proven that he can hold up and anchor a good defense, even when you're going small around him, I think that is very valuable. But like, he has proven that he can work okay defensively in a one big system. And that, I think, is a lot harder than playing defense in a two big system.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Anyone else who you guys felt improved? I mean, maybe some of the other restricted free agents we should run through quickly. I mean, we didn't really get into hardly any of those. What about Harrison Barnes quickly?
I don't think he's improved his stock.
Yeah.
I mean, he's gotten hurt, which he never got hurt. Other than that, he's playing about the same as I think anyone would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only thing that has helped his value is just teams going small more and succeeding more. I think that just it's more league trends than his actual performance. But he's at least still shooting 40% on threes. You wondered whether that was an aberration, and that's kept up, although really only through a month of play so far.
The guy I wanted to mention when I said I had two, the other guy was Evan Fournier. And I think he was one of those guys. It was a little bit more of an early season story, but I think he's really raised his profile over the course of this year that I think somebody's going to offer him a lot of money.
Yeah, early on he was leading the Magic in minutes. Now, though, he's not playing nearly as much as he was. And so I wonder about that. I mean, he's basically kind of settled in to being pretty close to what he was doing in past years. So let's see what I'm at. Yeah, I mean, he's basically very similar now, despite the fact that he was getting a lot of pub early on. 14.1 PR, it's a little better than last year, but, nothing incredible. I mean, I think he's shown himself to be kind of a lower-end starter, but maybe we might be letting that first month or so narrative dominate a little bit too much. He might be one of those guys. We'll have to wait and see whether he turns it around or continues kind of plummeting a little bit here.
I just missed the cut list. I had a few Mavericks, Dwight Powell, Zaza Pachulia, Darren Williams.
Zaza was high for me.
And so that was part of the reason I left them off the top three was, well, when all three are on the same team and that team has an excellent coach, how comfortable are you paying that guy?
Well, Zaza did this last year, though.
Sure.
And he just didn't get enough credit. And I think a big part of his, everyone was like, oh, yeah, it's the Bucks, it's their length. Like, Zaza is just sort of like holding down the fort in there. He's not really doing anything. He also has been very, very high in offensive rebounds percentage. So I think when you see the Bucks kind of plummeting down, the fact that all the advanced numbers love him for the second year in a row defensively. I mean, he doesn't protect the rim that well in terms of once the guys actually get the shot off, but he does position himself pretty well, cleans up the defensive glass. How old is he now? I mean, he's been around forever and ever.
Yeah,
everyone thought he wasn't 19 when he first came in, but
he's 31 now. He'll turn 32 during this season.
Yep.
Listed age.
Yeah, so you have to imagine he's going to be down in sort of like, 2 years, $20 million, something like that, just due to that age, I think. But
that's still a nice raise for him.
Yeah, and certainly for a guy who I think all of us, I certainly did at the time, just pilloried the Bucks for spending, I mean, it was a totally different market back then, but spending 3 years, $15 million on him, that turned out to actually be a great contract.
And then we pilloried them for trading him for nothing. The Bucks are just full of pillory.
Let me see if there was anyone else that I had. Brandon Rush is one.
I had Alan Crabb.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's solid.
That's a good one. He's a restricted free agent and has really shown himself to be a rotation guy this year.
I'll throw out.
Biombo would be another one, I'd say.
Well, see, I think Biombo's doing what he was doing. I don't know why he got so little last year. So if he's doing this again, I don't know what his stock's going to be.
It's another one of those role player on bad team guys, right? On Charlotte. And, you know, I think people, and then of course Charlotte didn't offer him a qualifying offer. So everyone must have been like, they didn't even like him internally. Like, he must be terrible. But I mean, he's shown that he can hold up pretty well. And I think he's helped the Raptors defense when he's been out there. I mean, he's not a guy, you know, I think of him as more of a swing starter backup kind of guy, but another guy I think who can help, protects the rim well enough that you could feel okay playing smaller on him.
I don't know how we've gone so far without at least mentioning Matthew Dellavedova.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying there's just so many of these guys that I felt like just have not gotten enough talk and have really played well, especially a lot of these young guys who like took qualifying offers or small offers and now have kind of just gotten another year to establish themselves.
The guy I was thinking of along those same lines is Shane Larkin. Like, Larkin, he doesn't make himself, you know, like a huge difference, but I think he's going to get more than the minimum, and he was a guy who has the player option for that, so I think that's a pretty notable swing for him.
Yeah.
One more I got for you guys. Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, he was on my list too.
I think due to his health, and I actually think that what he's done this year has been overrated, but I don't think a lot of people are going to agree with me, and I think that just the fact that he has looked pretty athletic lately and hasn't missed many games is big for him.
Can I give you do you want to talk about Wade?
No, I that's all I had on
Dan,
him.
Do you have...
Let me throw out one more.
Okay, I have one more too.
All right, Jared Sullinger.
Yeah,
he's defending better. You know, the Celtics seem to like him, and the only reason he didn't crack my top three, and I guess is our difference of opinion on the Eric Gordon route, is showing he can be healthy for half a season isn't quite enough. But if he stays healthy, you know, I think he's in line for a lot more money than what it was looking like.
Well, what is he right now? Like, on a decent team, like, where does he fall in your rotation?
He's a borderline starter.
I don't know about that. I mean, he did start for a while, but he's shooting pretty badly this year.
He's defending better.
Yeah, and he's lost weight. I think he's shown that his commitment is better. But I think it's another guy, too, who, because he became a starter early on when they replaced him, or they replaced David Lee with him, but now, I mean, he's really, he's just not shooting well enough. 27% on threes and, you know, in the mid-30s from mid-range. Like, and he's not going to do, if he's not making shots like that, I don't see him as more of really, like, than, like, a third/fourth big type of guy.
So the only other guy I wanted to mention, just because the situation is so interesting, is PJ Harrison. So he's a guy who the team declined an option on him, and I think that's going to make him more money, just because if they had picked it up, he would have been locked in at, you know, above the minimum, but not very much. And I think he's played himself into, you know, like, maybe a KJ McDaniels type contract.
Yeah, he's starting. Clifford seems to believe in his defense relatively well. I thought he was okay when we saw him in person against the Warriors the other day. I think you're right about that. The question is still going to be whether he is going to be just a gunner type or actually someone that you can rely on to make shots regularly. And, you know, as someone who has been dogged by attitude questions his whole career. But, I mean, just the fact that he's starting for a semi-decent team, you know, that's worth more than $1 million. And he's going to be unrestricted.
Maybe it's the anti-Biombo, because the best thing I can say about him is, well, I trust Clifford to some degree as a coach, and, you know, the Hornets are okay, and they think he's worth starting. So what am I not seeing in him? Because I don't think he's quite that good. His shooting is hit or miss, and his defense is okay. I'm just not quite as impressed.
Well, like, Dan, yeah, I mean, would you pay him, would you give him 3 years, $12 million or something like that? Would that be outrageous considering where the league is going?
No, not outrageous, but I'd rather somebody else do it than I do it.
Yeah, I mean, he does have a 7.9 PER this year and a true shooting percentage below 50% for a supposed shooter on 15% usage. Like, that's pretty bad. I mean, you're basically, if you're going to, I mean, he's got, like, a strong body. He can switch pretty well. He's increased his intensity level this year. You're basically making a gamble that shooting is going to come around. All right, let's take a quick break here from our sponsors. We'll be right back. All right, now let's get to the part that we're really all looking forward to. No, not really. But all right, we'll let you start it off, Dan.
All right, the player who has hurt his stock the most since the season started, Ty Lawson.
That was my number
one. Yeah, had
as well.
To be.
I mean, and it's his fault because he gave up the guaranteed money. As a condition of the trade of the Rockets, he allowed his salary for next season to become unguaranteed. And that was always going to be interesting how the Rockets would use that to their advantage. And now it's like not even a call. Like you cut him and you move on. The end.
Yeah, I mean, he's been playing a little bit better lately, especially when he's not paired with Harden. But it's very difficult to imagine that $13 million a year is something that they're going to want to swallow. This one saving grace for Lawson is that his guarantee date is the day after the draft, so he'll at least get to go on the market and not just be held around for trade fodder. But, you know, and I think even it's possible that there could be a market for him for a team like the Sixers, maybe, you know, that needs a little bit more experienced hand at point guard. That could be a place for him to rehabilitate his career with Mike D'Antoni. You know, I could see them kind of giving him a Rondo-esque contract this year, maybe a little bit less than that. So, I mean, I don't think all is lost with him, and he could still rehabilitate himself as well. But, you know, I mean, you also wonder whether he is kind of stopped partying. But, yeah, I mean, that's when he was not even supposed to ever be a free agent, except that now he's probably going to be because he hasn't played well enough. And that's the ultimate having hurt yourself.
I don't know every in and out of his personal issues, but when he said, I don't think I had to, like, should have had to go to rehab, like, I went because it was court ordered, that's not the best sign. Maybe that's fine. Maybe that's the truth. Maybe that's what it is. But if I were your team looking to pay him major money, that doesn't encourage me.
All right. Who you got, Danny?
Roy Hibbert. I just think we were kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt. Things were a little bit disappointing last year, and we're like, oh, you know, look how things work out. And now I think it's a lot harder to argue that you should be giving him meaningful money moving forward.
We had talked about him as kind of a litmus test for the value of a rim protector on the assumption that he was still going to be pretty good because the Lakers literally have no other decent defensive players beside him on the entire roster. And he, of course, they have not really been able to defend very well when he's been on the floor. I still think that he, maybe if you were in the right system, used, you know, 15, 20 minutes a game in the right matchups, that he could be okay. I think he actually came in better shape with a little more quickness this year, but it obviously has not translated at all at the team level. And he still is maybe, you know, the worst starting pick and roll center in the league. I mean, he really is just a complete suck offensively because he can't pick and roll or finish inside, and he's only a mediocre shooter.
And that's what worries me, is he came in a little better shape. This was a team that absolutely could use a player like him, and he's flopped so much. So who's going to say that they're the team that needs him even more than the Lakers did?
Yeah, now, I mean, we have seen some guys who are on the Lakers last year, I think these last 2 years really, maybe be unfairly maligned in free agency, but he is not someone that I think I would necessarily be willing to take much of a chance on unless you're just saying, all right, you know, we're going to pay this guy backup center money for a couple of years, you know, like $5 million a year max, you know, I think would be what I'd be willing to pay him. And, you know, I mean, if he had played well this year, maybe you could look at him as having gotten, you know, $15 million a year for a couple of years. So, yeah, he definitely has cost himself a lot of money. Mine is Tyler Zeller, who was starting for the Celtics most of last year in the playoffs. You know, there were numbers above $10 million a year bandied about sort of under the radar during his restricted free agent negotiations, and he has basically been completely out of the rotation nearly the entire season.
Yeah, I think the one thing that works a little bit to his advantage, and it's not much, I agree he's up there, is the Celtics are so deep with their bigs that you could at least maybe try and talk yourself into the fact that he's not playing isn't a huge indictment on him. It's only a minor indictment.
Yeah, maybe so. Although, you know, and it's possible maybe that he could start getting some backup center minutes instead of Sullinger
or David
at
Lee
at some point. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, Lee actually played today.
Yeah.
Huh? And according to Bob Vulgaris's tweets, it could basically cost the Celtics the game because they had a nice lead and ended up losing, and they were scoring really poorly with him on the floor. But yeah, I mean, and David Lee is you know, I just because we're talking about him, I would have considered him, but I already knew that he wasn't any good, and this basically this is a very expected outcome for me. I mean, the only question about it really was whether the Celtics were going to be smart enough to not play him, and now that they have, I mean, it's hard to imagine him getting much of anything going forward here.
I think it's to you, Dan.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I've already said enough mean stuff about David Lee to last a lifetime, so I don't need to say
anymore. We can move on from David Lee. But yeah, I mean Zeller, what do you think Zeller gets now? I mean, he's going to be restricted. That's not going to help. But, you know, his cap hold is going to be relatively significant. You know, I think in like the $6-7 million range off the top of my head. So maybe are they going to renounce him? They're going to be trying to do stuff under the cap. So it'll be interesting. I mean, he could end up potentially just being unrestricted, or maybe they still believe in him. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I think at this point I'd be a little surprised if he gets his qualifying offer. Not shocked, but if I had to guess one way or the other, I don't think he would.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that Boston, the answer to the question there is they're going to use the moratorium to their advantage, and they'll have made a decision by that point. And, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was still on the table if he took it. I mean, that would be a lot of money for him for considering where his value is, and that way you can be on a team that you know is going to be good, and he'll probably move up their rotation just because Lee will be gone.
All right, Dan, who you got next?
All right, I've got a theme with my picks. First off, Ty Lawson, number two, Terrence Jones, another Houston Rocket. He's not finishing like he did. His defense has regressed back to where it was when it was troubling. He just doesn't look like he has it.
He might be the worst post defender at the power forward position among people who actually have like normal power forward size as well.
Yeah.
Big problem. I mean,
yeah. And then you add on Clint Capella's emergence as somebody who can play next to Dwight Howard. I definitely saw Capella as the Rocket center of the future, but if in the interim he can be their power forward of the present, that hurts Jones.
Yeah, I mean, what did we got like $15 million or something for him in our mock rookie extension podcast? And
I think it was more than that.
It would be hard to imagine him coming anywhere close to that at this point, unless he really picks it up over the rest of the year. But I mean, if he's not going to start for them and is going to play 10-15 minutes a game off the bench, it's hard to imagine him getting even anywhere close to eight figures.
Yeah, and he's a guy who it's kind of getting harder to sell yourself on him because you're sitting there going, well, what are the Rockets not getting out of him? I mean, you're getting close to the point where it's like, well, you know, that you're not seeing what you can do better, and that's always scary when you're a young guy that it's harder to think of the sales pitches that you can use.
He is one potential saving grace is he is shooting 37%. On three-pointers this year, not taking a ton of them, but maybe you could see a team say, if we could still maybe develop this guy into something. I just worry that his feel defensively, and he's never going to be a guy that you're really going to go through offensively either, and he's probably doesn't have enough defense to play backup center even on small lineups either. So what does he really do for you at this point where you're going to give him a big contract?
Yeah, I definitely think he's a good pick. My next one is Lance Stephenson, who, astonishingly enough, actually has a lower PER this season than he did last year in Charlotte. Despite making 35% of his threes this year and shooting more of them than he ever has. Like, it's pretty remarkable that he's just having this season. He's also been, to me, disappointing defensively. He had a chance to really kind of establish himself as being the fifth banana with a very nice Clippers unit that just didn't have a fifth guy, and he completely failed at that, and he's, you know, kind of fallen out of favor with them. And so what happens is this is another situation like kind of what I just talked about with Terrence Jones, where it gets harder to build the sales pitches for him. And when you've done that twice in a row and you're in an uncomfortable position like he is, where he's gonna, you know, he has a team option because it they have to make the decision right before the moratorium as opposed to after. So that is the benefit, like with Ty Lawson, where he'll get free agency. But it's going to be tough.
I would be hard-pressed to imagine him getting more than $2 million a year, and I only say that just because this market is going to be so overheated and there's going to be so much cap space that teams will kind of have more of a chance to give out contracts between the MLE and the minimum than they would normally. But I think, you know, under the old environment, he would be like a minimum guy going forward unless he really turns things around. I mean, the only reason he didn't show up on my list was because I thought after last year that he basically was kind of at that point anyway, and unless he proved otherwise, you know, I think he was already there, and he's just kind of doing the same thing again.
Yeah, I was in the same boat as you, Nate, that I was so shocked by how terrible he was last year that I just basically resigned myself to the fact that he's going to be a low-paid player in his next contract.
All right, mine is Joe Johnson.
Yep.
Age 35, you have to imagine now that he is basically nearing the end to where he can't guard anyone at all. Maybe he could be like a small ball four for you off the bench, but he doesn't really rebound or protect the basket at all, obviously, at his age. ISO Joe has gone the way of the dodo. He's been one of the worst isolation players in the league right now. Can't do anything off the pick and roll either. I mean, it basically is reduced now to mostly a spot-up guy. He's been playing a little bit better lately, but as a guy who still was probably considered as at least a decent starter around this time last year, I think it's really gotten to the point where, you know, maybe you look at him as like a fourth wing type on a good team.
He better not take that buyout. Get that money while you can, and then try again next summer to go for a good fit.
Well, I don't know. He might be able to rehabilitate it a little bit, just looking better as a smaller part in a bigger machine, and just kind of maybe fool one or two teams that still like him. You know, that maybe a certain team in Los Angeles that, oh yeah, well, there's still enough here that we liked.
Maybe
a certain team in a certain Pacific Coast town. I guess they wouldn't talk like that though.
Probably not.
You got anything else to add, Dan, or you want to give us your next pick?
All right. You guys have a guess for my third pick? I'm keeping my theme up.
Demo.
Yep, you got it. Donatas Motiejunas. And this is mostly injury-related, although when he's gotten on the court, he just can't keep the ball at all. Like, he's just a turnover machine, so it doesn't help anything. Maybe that's all injuries, but the injuries are enough. And like we talked about with Terrence Jones, the fact that Clint Capella can play power forward, somebody, you know, it looked like the Rockets were going to pay Terrence Jones or Motiejunas, and now it seems like it's going to be neither.
Yeah, has either of them proven that they're even worth retaining their cap hold instead of just using that space for a team that considers itself a free agent destination? And, you know, I'll have to go back and look at how much space they could get even with Howard's cap hold if they get rid of Lawson and the cap holds from their two restricted guys. But, you know, I think they could get at least sign a reasonably significant player in that case. And I mean, just the back thing is scary, frankly. The fact that he was out so long, much longer than he was supposed to be, came back and then had to go see a specialist again. Now, supposedly he's getting to where he might be able to come back again soon. That's what JB Bickerstaff said today, but it really, that big of a back injury, I am hard-pressed to remember guys who were the same after like this long of a layoff due to a back injury.
It would have been really fun to know what the numbers that were thrown out before the extension deadline were, just because I'm sure both of them now would just take a time machine, go back and take it, almost no matter what it was.
Motiejunas, for sure. I haven't given up on Terrence Jones. I see enough intrigue there. I just think the reason he was so high on my list was maybe it was because I was higher on him than most going into the season. And it's just a really bad time for him to play like this. With Motiejunas, I think the concerns are more long-term, and maybe he can't get over it.
Yeah, I mean, this is his age 24 year, so you're getting pretty darn close to thinking that he kind of is what he is now. I think a lot of people expected him to take a big leap this year, and that obviously has not occurred.
My next guy might actually end up leveraging it so that he doesn't take as much of a hit, but Timofey Mozgov has really kind of changed his standing in the way that I think his position has weakened a lot, which is that it looked like he was the center. It looked like he was the guy, and Tristan Thompson was kind of the third wheel, was the other guy. And it's injury-related for sure, but he just hasn't played at that level this year. So I think if you're sitting there and you're another team, yes, he's unrestricted, but are you really going to fall all over yourself pushing up his price?
Yeah, I mean,
it's really a go ahead, sorry.
People are talking about the max for him, which struck me as pretty high, even in the environment.
I was thinking like 15 million, yeah. Maybe, you know, based on where he was last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think a little more than that, somewhere in between those two numbers. But yeah, I agree. He was one of my contenders. He just hasn't made the same impact, and you have to put it on him because we know this is a role he can be very successful in. Not that much has changed around him.
Well, it's really kind of sad to me because, you know, he was pretty underpaid last year. He really helped their season, had a great playoffs, and was playing hurt, apparently, because he had surgery in July. And he came back, he really struggled. There was talk he wasn't even going to be ready for the start of the year. Just has not been the same player. I mean, I think, you know, he's still wearing a sleeve on that knee. He's had flashes every now and again, but he's been replaced in the starting lineup. He's playing like 10 minutes a game now. And you have to wonder, how much damage did he do by playing on that knee last year instead of shutting it down and getting a surgery that he apparently needed? And now, you know, he could have cost himself millions and millions of dollars by doing that. I don't know for sure, but you wonder when a guy has surgery right after the playoffs like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. With him, the number one reason that he didn't quite make my list is I don't think he's this bad. Like, I think he's going to have moments, maybe some of them in this year's playoffs before the season ends, where he's going to look a lot better. And I think it might be too late for him to be in that max contract conversation that he once was in. But to rebound his value somewhat, I think he'll have opportunities.
Well, Andy has a ludicrous amount of leverage on the Cavs just because it's so hard for them to get better.
Well, they're basically doing great with him playing no role at all right now.
That's true.
Yeah, he might be the guy they let go.
And when you consider especially the fact that they're going to be in the tax again, a lot of these dire prognostications of their tax amount was that they were going to have to re-sign Mozgov at $15 million a year. And frankly, you know, maybe they need him against the Spurs. I don't think they really need him against anybody in the East. Maybe you could say the Bulls. But if he's not going to start a backup center like that, he actually kind of has a lot more trouble making an impact against second units since they generally seem to play smaller than first units. So I don't know. I think, and they've now gotten smaller more on the second unit as well, with him only playing 10 minutes a game, and LeBron's been playing a little bit more four without him playing as much. So I think that they are just kind of embracing playing small, and they've been very successful that way. And Tristan Thompson can guard pretty much any center out there. He's a pretty solid post defender. And maybe not as good at protecting the rim as Mozgov is. So I don't know. It is really too bad for him. And this is his chance. I think he's 29 now. So
one thing
this is his one chance.
One thing I could see if he continues along this road is maybe Cleveland would give him a sizable offer on a 1-year contract. If you're concerned about his health, and you know, I'm sure he'd be looking for more stability. But I see if the Cavs, and I don't know if this is important to them or not, but if they're trying to find a year upcoming where they can dip under the tax just for a year, just so they get out of the repeater range a little bit, I think it'd be 2017, 2018, when Varejao's contract becomes mostly unguaranteed. You maybe have a little more leverage then. So if you give Mozgov 1 year, see if he can figure out, and then if you want to pay the tax to keep him, if he's worth it, you can do it. And if he's not, that could be your year to sneak under.
If he keeps playing like this, how does David Griffin go to Dan Gilbert and justify paying another $50 million in Dan Gilbert's cash to keep this guy on the roster, though?
It'll make LeBron happy.
That is the answer to everything.
Well, I think that they, you know, if he's going to play like this, they could do almost as well as him just sign somebody else for the taxpayer MLE for, you know, $3.5 million. You know, that's the type of player that Mozgov is playing like.
It's Mac Biombo, baby.
All right, so whose turn is
yours?
Danny? Oh, it is my turn. There are some other good candidates here. I'm going to go with DJ Augustin. Now, out of the rotation in Oklahoma City, at least I haven't seen their last couple games, but From the tweeting I've seen, he has been. Cam Payne is the future there. He has now been actually playing more, playing quite well. I think at the start of the year, everyone thought of DJ as someone who had had some success, even as a borderline starter in Chicago and Detroit the last 2 years, as at least, you know, a decent backup point guard. And now he has a single-digit PER, and his defense has been horrendous, not helped by playing with Enes Kanter a lot of the time. So he's a guy that, you know, maybe you thought could get like $6-7 million a year as a backup point guard, you know, at least 4 or 5, and now, you know, he's looking like kind of more like a minimum $2 million a year guy.
The big reason he wouldn't make my list is he regressed a decent amount as soon as he got to Oklahoma City last year. So if we're going just by since the start of this year, this reinforces it, and that drops his stock. But there were already signs of this.
Yeah, there. I wasn't like that gung-ho about that one. What are some of the other potential guys for you guys?
Can we talk about Bradley Beal?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think you can make an argument that he... Well, we don't know where it's going to go, but you can make an argument that there's a possibility that he loses more money than anybody other than Ty Lawson, just because if the max isn't necessarily on the table for him, that totally changes the dynamic.
See, I think he went from somebody who was a lock to get the max and like have multiple max offers if he wanted them, to somebody who's still going to get the max but just not as resolutely. Like, I don't think it's going to make a difference in his checking account.
Well, a lot of it depends on what happens after this too. You know, last year he sat out about the same amount of time with this stress reaction, came back and played pretty well, had a good playoffs, and you know, nobody thought much more of it. He's talking about being closer to returning now, so I think it all depends what happens the rest of the year. If he misses significant time again with that same injury or something that's kind of in the same chain, then maybe I might move more towards Danny's approach. But there's just, he's a young shooting guard who shoots 40% on threes, has plenty of room to grow, defended reasonably well in the playoffs last year. I mean, there's so much money out there, some team's going to take a chance on him.
Yeah, another one I'll throw out is Myers Leonard. I had a little higher hopes for him this year. He looked like a 50, 40, 90 player the year before, and he's just not the same.
Is the 50% what he's shooting at the rim?
Is he that high right now?
I think he was 54% the last time. We talked about him on a podcast last week. So, and he's taking under 10% of his shots at the rim, too.
I mean, what a great opportunity for him with LaMarcus Aldridge leaving, with you know, Matthews and Batum leaving. I mean, I thought he was in line for a big year, and he just has not showed it one bit.
Shooting, like, in the low 30s on threes. I mean, I think he's just being misused because he's not playing at center. Like, that's how he had that awesome playoffs last year, was he was playing center next to LaMarcus Aldridge, and Memphis had no way to deal with him. Like, if he's playing as a four, all he can do is just stand there and shoot threes. So I think he's partially being misused, but I also, he hasn't really shown much to indicate that he can do any other aspect of being a center despite his athletic gifts if he is played there. But I do think that him playing out of position, he's been put in just about the worst position to succeed right now.
Yeah, I think he's the type of guy now who could get underpaid and get a nice little contract, because you have to use him right, which is hard. And I mean, he's at the level where, are you willing to kind of commit the resources to using him right? You know, he's not so good that you want to build certain things around him. But if he's your bench center, I think that could be really fun for the right team.
Yeah, agreed. I think he could be sort of a Channing Frye type, but he has to play center. Like, he's not good enough defensively. He's a statue on defense at power forward, and you know, if he's playing power forward, you might as well just go small against him, and then he's not going to be able to guard you or get out on you at the 3-point line either. So it doesn't make much sense. And his shooting, teams know how to deal with a guy who can shoot threes at the four now. You know, this isn't 10 years ago.
One I want to mention, just because I want to hear you guys talk about what you would offer him, is Dion Waiters.
Oof. You know, I considered him for somebody who's improved his stock. You know, he's found a little bit of success helping a team. Maybe it's just completely because I had no expectations for him and I thought the bare minimum. But I think he's up a little bit. I wouldn't want him on my team, but I wouldn't
just
want him
fun,
on my team
what,
coming
what
into
you,
the
year. What would you offer him if you ran a team and let's say you had $30 million in space? How much would you offer him?
You know, essentially. couple million a year and hoping he can figure it out.
I understand why you feel that way to some extent, Dan, because he has at least shown that he can play on a winning team and not just completely hijack everything. You know, he's at least played with some modicum of sanity. His usage has been 18 and a half so far this year, but he still turns it over a fair amount for a guy with that low of a usage. PER is the worst of his career. A guy who has had a true shooting percentage above 50 once in his whole career. Not shooting that well on threes. He's at 32%. So, and he has kind of failed as the creator on their second unit when he's been entrusted to do that. So, and this is a second unit that has some other nice offensive pieces with Cantor. He usually has Morrow next to him for some shooting. Augustin, despite his struggles, is still a good shooter from three-point range. He should be able to be successful offensively if he ever was going to. And now this is his age 24 year. It really, he is closing games for them. So he's got like that patina of success around him. But if you really look at the numbers and how they play with him on the court, it's there's very little to suggest that he is, you know, any more than a guy you might pay a couple million to in the hopes that maybe some way he will figure it out.
I want to give you guys something. I didn't know this until I was prepping for this that I just think is kind of amazing. So his field goal percentage this year versus his time in Oklahoma City last year, so just that time, is identical down to the 0.1%. And his three-point shooting is 0.3% different, and his two-point percentage is 0.4% different. So in terms of that kind of efficiency, it's exactly the same season.
Yeah, I think he's done a little, I mean, those numbers aside, I think he's done a little bit of a better job of fitting in when he plays with Durant and Westbrook. Still not great, not a guy I'd want around. Like, I don't know what the role is for him on any team. You know, I wouldn't want him being the spot-up shooter next to star players. I wouldn't want him running my offense. Like, I just wouldn't want him on the court. But he has some talent. For a couple million, I might take a chance to see if he can figure something out.
Maybe you could argue that he's improved defensively a little bit to where, you know, he's not just getting his butt kicked when he's closing with those other guys, but it's really trading a first round pick for him has not worked out so far. Anybody else that you guys wanted to talk about before we go?
Just throwing out a couple more names who are on my long list. Chandler Parsons, although I think a lot of that's injury related. I don't think he should.
Well, and that's why it is troubling though, in some respects.
Sure. Joakim Noah, I think, is having his offense fall apart a little bit at the wrong time.
I would disagree with you on that. I think that Joe has looked much better athletically. I think that he, when he has played with shooting around him, he actually has been able to be somewhat effective. I think he's back to being pretty good defensively. I was worried that he would just never be the same athletically, and I still don't think that he's amazing or anything, but I think he's playing much better than he was playing in the playoffs last year. So at least my expectations for him were pretty worrisome, and I think he has actually exceeded those so far to the point where I can at least think that a lot of his struggles with movement last year, and he also even had some nice games before he got hurt where he was showing more confidence. I mean, he even had like 20 points against the Knicks. So I actually would not put him on that list at all.
See, what worries me a little bit about him is I'm not shocked his athleticism has come back, but I thought if it came back, he would look better offensively. So it worries me that, like, if everything breaks right for him, that's not as high as I thought it would be.
I think he's, especially that whole Bulls offense was really messed up for the first month and a half or so of the year. I think that he's actually is going to show something once he comes back, especially if he plays more. I mean, he was playing with Gibson most of his minutes where there was just no space on the floor. They were playing that Hoiburgo lineup with no good offensive players. I think with him playing alongside Mirotić and McDermott, I think he's going to be a lot better now that he's being used correctly. We'll see, though. But I expect him to do better in the aggregate, and he had been playing better before he hurt that shoulder.
What about Al Jefferson?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was on my long list.
That actually should have probably been higher.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's on a good team, but they haven't looked like they've really missed him that much, and he's at the age where people are going to be very, very hesitant to give him a lot of money.
and his marijuana suspension. I don't think anybody's going to be mad that he was smoking, but the fact that he got caught, that even at this age, like, he's a veteran and couldn't do better than not to get caught.
Yeah, I mean, some people in the league that I talked to were surprised. They didn't think of him as that kind of a guy, so that if that can maybe affect his reputation a little bit. Just the trouble staying healthy as well. He has had a couple of monster games early in the year, and Charlotte has started to flounder a little bit offensively now without him, and obviously without Batum as well. So we'll see. I mean, that surgery that he had, a guy who's had plenty of knee problems, he tore his ACL before. So we'll see. I mean, if he can come back and kind of look like he's close to the same guy, but, you know, I don't see him that any team is going to sign him thinking that he's going to be a starter as it stands now. And this is someone who, you know, was close to all-star status a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I just don't think there are a huge number of teams looking for a player like him. That's going to hurt him, too.
Yeah, and hopefully this trend that Danny and I have talked about a fair amount of getting, you know, more post-up bigs on the second unit as a way to get some offense on the second unit, and where the other team's not going to have their elite guys driving to the basket, so you can get away with the bad defense more. Maybe that'll end up being more of a role for him, and then if he really has it going, you can close with him. Like, maybe that's ultimately what's going to happen for him. He also, I mean, maybe he is at the point where he's made enough money where he's just going to say, I want to go sign with a winner now. I mean, he's had, what, like two playoff appearances in his whole career? He's been on some bad teams.
Does he have a playoff series win?
No. I don't think he has a playoff game win. I think he got swept with Utah.
When he was with Boston. Back in the day.
I don't think they made the playoffs when he was... Oh, you might be right.
Yeah, they did one year.
When he was really young.
Yeah, like 2006. Yeah, 2006.
2005.
I think they like the Pacers or something. Yeah, well, certainly not while he was a primary player, but I don't think he'll be telling tales about that awesome series against the Pacers. Wasn't that the series where Paul Pierce got some like really bad technical and like ended up costing them a crucial game?
I do not remember that.
You guys might be too young for that one. All right, we're kind of going far afield here. Anything else we got to talk about before I let you guys go?
I've got nothing.
Well, so it was a seven game.
This is going to require heavy editing.
It was a seven game series, and they lost to the Pacers. So I think Nate had that about right.
All right, excellent. Yeah. All right, Dan, you got anything to plug before you go?
League Pass Alert Warriors Weekly will come out tomorrow. Working on a series of other big things. We'll see what happens with them.
Wait. So now you're co-opting three names: Daniel, Danny, and Dan.
Oh, I'm just so used to it only being me.
All right, yeah. I mean, Dan Feldman, do you have anything to plug before we go?
Well, I've been off a couple days, but before that, I wrote something a little more in depth on Channing Frye and the excellent role he's playing for the Magic, helping their turnaround, how the team's changed around him to really take advantage of what he does, and you know how he fills his role better than almost anybody in the league fills their role, and that was perfectly timed for the Magic to hit a losing streak and him not to look so good. So hopefully they turn it around. You can go back and read that, and it doesn't look as stupid.
So is he? I mean, what did you think about him as playing like the four versus the five, and like how has that factored into like how he's been playing?
Well, I think the one big difference where, it, you know, he looked like a guy who really couldn't handle the four, but he seems to be moving better now this year. He was banged up at early last season that probably lingered.
He had that MCL injury, which I think underratedly kind of ruined his season.
Yeah, at least defensively. Offensively, I'm sure it played a factor. I think the biggest problem was the Magic's offensive scheme was such a mess last year. You know, he needs teammates to find him. He needs to be set up. Now the Magic move the ball well, and that suits him.
All right, that'll do it for today. Thanks so much for listening. I will try to edit out some of the dead air. We'll see if I get all of it. but it's hard when you have three people to know like whose turn it is to talk. But we should just rudely talk over one another.
Oh, I can do that if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, no, I think that should be the goal.
I'll talk over you the whole time next time.
Well, good. Get a start on
Am
it right
I doing
now,
it right?
As you seem to be. All right. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. Dan Feldman, where can we follow you on Twitter?
Dan Feldman NBA.
That'll do it for tonight. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to y'all next time.